Paratthaya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvam Anusantatami Bhagavad Gita Bhagavadvaishini. In verse 14. Vinati. Santushta Satatam Yogi. Yatatma Dhrita Nishtayaha. Mayarpita mano buddhihi, yo mad bhaktasame priyaha, santushtaha satatam yogi, yata atma, dhrida nishchayaha, mayi arpita mano buddhihi, yaha mad bhaktaha same priyaha.
Did we do 13?
Yes.
We more than did it. We did it 2 weeks. Why do I want to put a typo here in my book?
Just a minute.
Oh, I have a typo. I couldn't figure out why they had a plural, priyaha. It should be priyaha. I think you probably have it right in your book. Priyaha, short, huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have priyaha.
I guess I don't have one.
So you don't have this? Okay. Yeah, it should be made priyaha. You have that? Okay. Remember that all of these verses from 13 on to the end of the chapter are verses kind of extolling and describing the jnani, the one who has self-knowledge, versus the karma yogi, or the mumuksha, the one who does have self-knowledge. So he says, santushtaha. Comes from the root tush, means to be satisfied. Samyat tushtaha, the one who is satatam santushtaha, who is always satisfied. Always means everyone is satisfied sometimes, right? But nobody is satisfied all the time, right? Except the jnani. And the reason the jnani is satisfied, that santushtaha, all of the time, satatam means always, always, is because that is the nature of the self. So, in order to say I am full and complete all of the time, is the same as saying, I am timelessly full and complete, because that is my nature, is santushtaha. That's why when we were doing the contemplation, once you just relax, kind of evoke that inner friend, give a little bit of time for the mind to kind of relax and all of the stress and strain and hurts and things, just to be allowed to be in the presence of the buddhi, which is an inner friend. Right? There's two things happening there. The manas might be feeling some agitation or hurt or be active. The buddhi, though, the buddhi is the one who has knowledge, really, in terms of gaining knowledge. It's the buddhi that has that. The buddhi then can be an inner friend to all of those problems if they are there, all of those hurts if they are there. That allows the manas to relax because it's being held, it's being cared for. As that manas relaxes, the buddhi, which has at that time, we're talking in meditation now, what instance the buddhi evokes that sense of being an inner friend, the buddhi is differentiated from the manas and the problems. See that? Because I'm holding now and aware of and being an inner friend to whatever is going on in the mind. The buddhi at that time has for itself, at all times it has for itself, the atma, the self, right? But it is now in harmony with the self. Because once you evoke that inner friend, then you, the buddhi, are like kind of a clean mirror to the self. So you're not creating, the buddhi is not creating a problem, it just simply is being its natural self. It's differentiated itself from the problems, from the hurts and the pains. And so now the buddhi becomes like a clean mirror, so to speak, and a voice for yourself, for the self. And the voice can be kind, and it can be caring, and it has wisdom, and it knows how to handle these type of problems, it knows how to comfort. And so that's the buddhi becomes the jnani, who is also has some worldly wisdom and psychological wisdom, and can give aid to the parts of the mind that are hurting. Now, the buddhi, from its own standpoint, is recognizing and enjoying the self. Right? Because it's like a clean mirror, and it's just enjoying my being. And so my being actually is the one that nurtures. Like I'm just talking in a different kind of language now, but I kind of want you to use this language. The self, in a sense, is nurturing the buddhi that has knowledge, because the self by its nature, not as a verb, but as the very nature of ananda, of wholeness, of, as fullness, is by its nature nurturing. Not that it's doing an active nurturing, it is nurturing by its very swarupa. Because we say, that's why we use words like it is whole and complete in, by its very nature. Its nature is nurturing. Its nature is ananda. Its nature is fullness, wholeness, completeness. All of these words are just trying to point to this me, the one that is there, present to the mind and very noticeable for the jnani or for the mumukshu as you start to recognize, you know, the stability of yourself, that is there illumining the buddhi, and then the buddhi is holding all of the experience, in a sense, if I want to gradiate it like that.
Were you using those words for the buddhi?
The buddhi.
The wholeness and the...
No, for the atma. For the atma. For the atma. So, for the jnani, the atma is aparoksha, is immediately recognized as the very being of the buddhi, as the very self of the buddhi. Mm. Kind of like the pot, the clay is the very self of the clay is the very self of the pot. My changeless presence is the very self of the buddhi. Right? And so enjoying the buddhi, enjoying myself, I would say, the buddhi would say, the aham would say, in a sense, I am always santushtaha. I am always whole and complete. Talking about my nature. My nature is the self. And the self is always whole and complete. So the buddhi can be saying a lot of different things. It can be talking, it can be comforting, it can be reading, it can be looking, it can be doing all kinds of things. Right? But the self is always whole and complete. Right? The mind is not always whole and complete. The manas is not always whole and complete. Sometimes it's hurting, sometimes it's agitated, sometimes it's depressed or whatever it's whatever is going on. But for a jnani, I'm not talking necessarily about a mumukshu, but a jnani, somebody who knows the self is all your being, which is whole and complete, is always there as the refuge for the manas, for the mind, for all of the parts. It is the ongoing refuge. And the buddhi, if the manas gets worked up and lost with all of its complexes and upsetness, the buddhi for the jnani can comfort that manas, bring it home, right? Take care of it, always enjoying the santushtaha, the fullness of the self. The fullness of the self, of your being, does not come and go, doesn't change. The manas, the emotions, and the things that may or may not be occurring in the mind don't do anything to you. they take place in you. Right? And the buddhi that has knowledge is the one who kind of is negotiates the world. The buddhi has knowledge, it's the one that negotiates the world, and the world includes your inner space. It includes the space of the manas, of the mind, the emotions, the complexes. The buddhi negotiates that inner space as well as negotiating the outer space. All the while enjoying the santushtaha of my being, right, which is its very self. So here if you say the santushtaha satatam, that wholeness is always there because it is my nature. And for that, that one is a yogi. Now, the third word here, the yogi, from yogin, okay? The yogin means the one who has yoga. So yoga, Swamiji talks about this in his commentary. Yoga has two different meanings. One is to control and restrain, nidharana, the pulling and restraining, keeping in line. Like if you were to meditate, and you're meditating in such a way that you're focusing your mind, you're keeping it in line. You're restraining. That's one meaning. The other meaning is avyuj, the verbal root, is to unite. And so here we're meaning to unite, where the buddhi itself is united with the self. Now, that uniting is the uniting brought about by knowledge. There's no real uniting, because there is no self that's apart from anything, really, for it to have to unite. The self is already there. So the uniting, in terms of the buddhi, is the removal of the ajnanam, of the ignorance, which causes that ahankara to identify yourself with what it is not. So actually, Swamiji will say, and Shankara will say, really the yoga that we're talking about is viyoga. It's a separating from these false identifications. So when the buddhi has done that viyoga, separating from the false identifications, it is naturally united in terms of knowledge with yourself. So it's a uniting from the sense of disuniting with all of the superimpositions that's been brought about by ajnanam. And so the buddhi of the jnani is a yogi, in the sense that buddhi now enjoys the nature of the self, which is has always been its nature. That's what's so wonderful about knowledge. It's not like you're discovering a new self. You are discovering that you are free. Not that there's a big Atma out there, you know, a big Atma to be reached. It's that this, a higher Atma, yeah, a higher Atma to be reached, a more spiritual. Yeah, so that we can, as we evolve, climbing the ladder of spirituality, will eventually reach the Atma. But what is so extraordinary that makes moksha what it is it's the realization that the very personal me that you have always been, it is that me that is Brahman, that me that is Ishvara. The very personal me that makes me me, you all of a sudden realize that this me that has always been me is actually free of all of these upadis. In fact, it's free of the whole creation, and it's the self of the whole creation. And so when that's recognized, what that means is that this very personal me, which is Ishvara, means Brahman, the self of Ishvara, you're never away from. So that uniting with God, which all of the many different religions are talking about, is the highest goal, really, union with the Lord, union with God. What it actually is here is the recognition of the identity, the presence, the very being of your being is the self of Ishvara. And so when that's recognized, the upadis, the body, mind, sense organ, this body, the mind, the sense organs, the creation, is never away from Ishvara. That your mind always has for its very center, for its very self, you know, God, Ishvara, Brahman, the self. And so that's what we mean by yogi. That person, so these are just, each word is descriptive. And the satatam means, goes with both santushta. Satatam means always. That person, that jnani is always santushtaha and is satatam yogi. That union is always there because the union is a union of jnanam, of knowledge. The recognition of of Ishwara, of Brahman being me. The Mahavakya is a union, right? It's a sentence which is a union. You are that. You equal that. So the you and the that are brought together. That's the you. Do you see that? So I recognize that this I is Ishwara. And so now I have united myself with Ishwara. The union has taken place. It's a union of knowledge, of a fact. Okay? So here, then yathātmā means the one for whom this knowledge is, that for that one the mind is yathātmā, is controlled. What the mind, now when you say that, when we say here ātmā means mind, which often means, so yathātmā, the mind which is controlled, under one's control. The mind is brought under your control as a jnani because everything that the mind has ever sought and all the reasons that has ever gotten into trouble, the reasons for getting into trouble, for getting into pain and hurt and all of the anger and all of the different things that cause it to be not a yathātmā and a yathātmā, you know, those are eliminated as the mind gains what we call this next one, dṛṢha-niṣṭhayaḥ, this clarity of knowledge. And the buddhi is dṛṢha-niṣṭhayaḥ. It gains that clarity of knowledge, and when that knowledge is there, then the problem, what the mind has been seeking, it finds. The mind thinks that it wants this, that, or the other thing, in this particular way or that particular way, because it believes, because of ajnanam, that my happiness is dependent on these situations falling into place in this particular way. That's what it believes. And it is not all right to not be happy. It's like saying, if I say it's all right to not be happy, to be whole, to be complete, it's like saying it's not all right, it's all right with me not to be me. My nature is wholeness, completeness. Because of the ajnanam, when I've identified with my mind and my mind believes, it's projected that out into the creation, then I become threatened. The mind becomes very threatened because there I am out there. It says, there's my happiness out there, there's my wholeness, there's what makes me even want to live is out there. You know, and then I have to achieve it. I have to get it back. I have to unite with it, right? The yogi, I have to become a yogi with myself, which is out there. And so that delusion is, the whole world is running on this delusion. But when one gets dṛṢha-niṣṭhayaḥ, a knowledge which is replete with clarity, dṛṢha means firm. Niṣṭhaya means clear, free of doubt. So the recognition of your own, of your being and its relationship with the world is aparoksha to you. See it. It's clear. It's free of doubt. Then the mind, that projection is not occurring. Not in any way that has any type of firmness to it. Because the mind is already abiding in yourself, which is aparoksha. Aparoksha means it's not away from you. It's not protection. It's not aparoksha. It's not out there to be experienced later. The wholeness that I am is already fully recognized by the buddhi, and the mind has matured into that. And so even when the mind, as it has a little emotional lag time, it starts running out, the buddhi just envelops it, takes care of the little children, calms them down, and then brings the manas back home to the source of the ananda that was delusionally, because of ajnana, projected onto the world. Right? And so, when that's the case, my mind doesn't have to go anywhere to become whole and complete. When it's fine, it's yathātmā. When it's fine, You know, there's no ajnanam torturing it. My fullness is out there, and so-and-so stopping me from getting it, and this person is doing this, this, and this to stop me from getting my complete, which is causing reaction upon reaction of, on reaction as I'm struggling to save myself. When that, all of that is gone, then who you naturally are is a whole and complete and compassionate being. That's natural. When this is, let's put it this way, this is how everyone is when they're not upset. That's who you are. Okay, when you're not upset, hurt, angry because of all of the samsara, this is who you are. It's what's your nature. So say you take all of this guttabut, what Swamiji calls it, out of the picture. Then your mind is fine. It doesn't need to be controlled. You don't need to control your mind when everything is fine. And when the mind has sitting in the source of ananda, you know, I don't need, a happy person doesn't need this to be happy. You know, I'm already happy. I don't need this to be happy. And so if, because of the prarabdha karma, you have certain likes and dislikes, and I gravitate toward this, not toward this, I would have this presence over, preference over this preference. That's fine, because if I don't get my way, that's also okay. But if I do get my way, I'll go toward this. My prarabdha and all of my experiences, I prefer this. If I don't get it, it's fine. So where's the problem with the mind? The mind doesn't care. So it's not creating a problem, so it's naturally yathatma. It's not that the jnani is going to, you know, let me be a jnani and control my mind. There is nothing to control. Once that dhritic nishta is there, once that nishta is there, once that clarity is there. So such a person is a yathatma. And then he says, and again, that person, that jnani, mayi, in me, arpita mano buddhi. All of this we've talked about is this. The buddhi and the manas are devoted to me. Worship me. Worship me means they pranam to me. The whole life is a recognition. The whole life in the buddhi is a recognition of Ishvara. Now when I say that, it's like this. The truth of Ishvara is Brahman, is my being. So the buddhi, recognizing myself, is recognizing Brahman, the self of Ishvara. And recognizing the world, which includes the manas, the sense perception, all that exists in duality, is recognizing Ishvara. So inside and out. So Ishvara, what is Ishvara's self is Brahman, right? So Brahman is the very self of the whole. I am Brahman. And so looking out into the Maya, the whole Maya Upadi, I'm experiencing Ishvara. Looking in, I'm experiencing Ishvara's self, Brahman. Understand what I mean? You, the conscious being, are what we call Brahman, the Atma, which is Brahman. If I look at the Maya Upadi, this for the Jnani, this Jiva, your body, mind, sense organs, all of your experiences, everything without exception, is Ishvara. As a karma yogi or as an ajnani, this isn't included in Ishvara. This is the jiva who is experiencing and worshipping Ishvara. That's the karma yogi. I, the jiva, who am trying to gain knowledge, and have a karma yoga buddhi, and do everything really as I have a prasada buddhi, and I take everything as Bhagavan's grace. That prasada buddhi, I accept all the situations as coming from Ishvara. And it's that karma yoga buddhi that gives my mind enough really shanti to be able to absorb and gain this knowledge. But as I gain this knowledge, I realize that this whole thing, including this body, mind, sense organs, is Ishvara. And so what is my experience? Looking out is Ishvara, looking in it is Ishvara. How do I experience my mind? Ishvara. How do I experience my emotions? Ishvara. How do I experience, you know, the punya and the papa? All Ishvara. So I experience an infinite order of which this body, mind, sense organs is a part, right? And this part is part and parcel of Ishvara. And so here when he says, this one, this jnani, who is the mayi in me, toward me, this arpita, that worship. The buddhi and the manas are, you could say, worship me. With that prasada buddhi. Worship means I recognize all of this as Bhagavan. That's what it means. It's not any type of worship in kind of a Western way. It's worship in the recognition that all of this is Ishvara. So everywhere I look, everything that comes to me, I take as prasad, I see the whole thing as Ishvara, including the body, mind, and sense organs. So such a person who is like this, he is Madbhaktaha. Now, and he literally says, Madbhakta, he is my devotee, he is devoted to me, and Same Priyaha, he is beloved to me. And so now, to understand this, it becomes very interesting. This is a jnani, the jnani, who is recognized, who is santushtaha, satatam santushtaha, means whose nature is always full and complete. Who is a yogi, means the ahankara now has identified with the atma, with the self. So that person, bhaktaha, is devoted to me. The me is the atma, the Brahman. Krishna is Brahman, right? Krishna isn't just, it's not I'm devoted to you, the form of Krishna. It's Krishna himself is saying that one, that jnani, that one is devoted to me, the self. And that one is beloved to me because that self is what is beloved. So it's like saying myself is beloved to me because myself is the beloved, right? So what is, if I were to say, what is the most beloved to me? Is the beloved, the one who is me. Who is that which is most devoted to me, right? The me that is being, that is I'm devoted to, is the beloved, is the Ananda. So here, it's like Krishna himself could say, from the standpoint of his own upadhi, he could say, you know, I am the most devoted to me, right? To the Ananda, which is my very being. Swamiji says in his bhasha, he says, like in astrology, they use this term Rahu's head or Ketu's tail, you know. Rahu's head, in astrology it's the north node and the south node for Ketu. Rahu's head, Rahu is the head. It's not that Rahu is somebody who has a head. Rahu is the head. You know? So now if I say my Ananda, I am the Ananda, right? I am the very Ananda. So like that, he says the one who is beloved to me, He is my beloved. He, the Atma, is my beloved. You know, he is devoted to me. Devoted to me means to the Atma. The one who is the Atma, right? So the jnani is devoted to the Atma, and he is my beloved. You see what it? So it's the same. He is my beloved because my beloved is the Atma. He is devoted to me, that Atma, which is the beloved. So it's a very beautiful play on words. Otherwise you have to take it. If you don't take it like that, either Krishna is some ajnani, you know? But if we're the jnani, the self of the jnani is Atma, the self of the guru also is Atma. Krishna is the guru, right? Krishna is the Lord. So who is the Lord's self is the Atma. Who is the jnani self is the Atma. So the aham goes into the Atma, the aham goes into the Atma. So the one who is devoted to me is the jnani who knows me, right? Who is this very self. And the one who is beloved to me is that very Atma. Do you see how it goes? It's very, very nice. So, santishtaha satatam yogi yathatma dhridanischayaha mayarpita mano buddhihi yo madbhaktaha. He who is all of these things, yaha, he is madbhaktaha. He is devoted to me, and he is my beloved. Sane Priyaha. Let's do the next verse. Yasman nodvijate lokaha. Yasman nodvijate lokaha. Lokan nodvijate chayaha. Lokan nodvijate chayaha. Harsha marshabhyo dvegaihi. Harsha marshabhyo dvegaihi. Mukto yasachame priyaha. Yasachame priyaha. Yasmat na udvijate lokaha lokan na udvijate chayaha. Harsha amarsha bhaya udvega udvegaihi. So harsha amarsha bhaya udvegaihi mukta yaha saha chame priyaha. Says yasmat, from whom, because of whom or from whom, na udvijate lokaha. Lokaha means the world, means people, all beings. Lokaha, the world. So from whom the world does not fear, not tremble, really. The world doesn't tremble because of whom the world, from whom there is, the world has no fear. Yasmat is from whom, fifth case. Or you could say from whom, because of whom the world doesn't fear. So the world of all beings are not afraid of this person. Yasmat na dvijate udvijate lokaha. It's na udvijate lokaha. And also lokat na udvijate chayaha. And he who is not afraid of the world. Fear governs the fifth case. So the one who doesn't cause any fear, bring any fear to the world, does it make the world afraid? And the one who also isn't afraid of the world, yaha, he who na udvijate, does not fear from the world. Okay. It governs for fifth case like that. In English, you just say doesn't fear the world. Then also, harsha. Harsha means horripilation. Horripilation is a kind of a term that when you become ecstatically happy, so happy that your hair stands on end. You like the hair on your arms and things, and all, you know, your eyes water and your hair. So you're just ecstatically happy. That's harsha, that horripilation. Then,
what's that called?
Harsha, horripilation.
Oh, the hair. Oh,
yeah, standing on end. Okay. Yeah. Then, amarsha is the inability to. What's the word for that? What is the word Swamiji uses for that?
It's
intolerance. Yeah, intolerance, where you cannot tolerate the behavior of others or what the world, the situation the world is causing for you. You can't tolerate it. It's also the type of hatred or dislike that we call jealousy or envy. Like you're intolerant of the happiness or the talent or the
success
of another person. You can't tolerate it. That's jealousy. You know, you have hatred for a person that really doesn't have anything to do with them or anything that they've done to you. But they may have something or someone that you want.
Mm-hmm.
And so Swamiji said this jealousy is one of the hardest things to work out with another person, because you're really not at fault in the situation. You haven't done anything, really. It's that you have something or you have some success that the other person wants and they hate you for it. Right? But it's not that, it doesn't really have to do with the personal relationship that you have with that person, so it's hard to get rid of it. And then Swamiji said that when he was young and just coming up as a sannyasi, you know, he had, there were a group of some friends you know, who used to be friends, but as he started kind of becoming more and more involved and gained sannyasa and started to become who he was, a lot of those friends who were very close to him actually, instead of, they became jealous. And so how to handle that jealousy, because for you, they're still your friend. And there's two ways. You're still there in a situation like this. You are still their friend and they are still your friend. But this thing has come between because of something that has happened that made the other jealous. You see what I mean? And so he said the only way he ever found to deal with that, and maybe people who become very successful in one way or another have to deal with this type of thing, but the people that are around them that wishes it were them, you know? He said he would be able to invoke the friendship when he was in their presence, and that would all go away. But then as soon as he would leave, it would come back. So it's only by the strength of the presence and the strength of the friendship that would kind of make it subside for the moment. But when he would leave, the problem was is that they wanted something that they didn't have that this other person had. And they were could not tolerate that. That's why this intolerance, jealousy is included in that. There's another word, a type of envy. Envy is not so much, not as bad or as toxic as jealousy, but envy is just, it's not that you don't want the other person to have it. That's jealousy. But envy is where, you know, another person has something and you wish you had that too. Mm-hmm. It's not that you don't want them to have it, but you're envious. You wish that you had that too. And the envy that you have makes you feel bad. Because you want that. This person has it, I want that. And so that puts kind of something in your relationship. You can't tolerate the situation. So jealousy and envy are two, and the other is just intolerance of the situation that the world provides for you. You know? You can't accommodate it. You know this titiksha?
Mm-hmm.
Titiksha. Titiksha. You know we have...
Is it again?
It means accommodation. But you have to explain accommodation. In the sadhana chatushtaya, these fourfold qualifications for a mumukshu, for an adhikari, a qualified student for this knowledge. There's viveka, vairagya, and then the group of six. Shama, dhamma, upadati, titiksha. Shraddha, samadhanam, shraddha. Titiksha means that the world is always throwing at you many, many different situations. Some are conducive to your comfortable, and some are not, you know. But you need to be able to accommodate all of it, or you're only going to be happy a small percentage of the time. Otherwise, you know, the whole world has to be accommodating you, or it doesn't work that way. And so for a mumukshu, what is important is gaining this knowledge. That's what's primary for me, is to gain this knowledge. And so it's not about I want this or I want that from the world. I can accommodate the world because that's not really where my desire is. My desire is to gain this knowledge and to be free from all of that, because I no longer think that this is really in the end going to have the capacity to make me happy. So I accommodate this and stick to my studies. I'm not asking the world to make me happy. I just pray to Bhagavan. All of these Shantipata, Sahana, Vavatu, all the ones that we chant, all of those are prayers. Please create a situation, you know, where I am free to gain this knowledge. Mm-hmm. That's what the Shantipata is. Take care of the world in such a way that I can gain this knowledge. You know? And the titiksha itself becomes a value. You know, let me be able to accommodate the things that come my way. But it's also, as your mind has that viveka vairagya, I'm not really asking the world to make me happy like I used to. and I'm talking as an Ajnani, as a Mumukshu, because I've recognized the fallacy of that whole thing. I'm not really, that's not my intent. If it's cold out and I was going to go swimming, that's okay. I just won't go swimming today. It doesn't matter, you know. If I baked a cake and burnt it, that's all right, the cake burnt. That's all there is. It's not that I would choose it, you know. But I don't have this amarsha, okay? So harsha, amarsha, bhaya. Bhaya is really the vow of a sadhu, you know. And this is, now we're talking about a jnani, you know. I'm not asking, first of all, bhaya means fear. I'm not asking the world to be different. And I'm not in competition with the world. Now, if I'm not asking the world to be different, there has to be a reason. And the reason I'm not asking the world to be different is because I, in fact, am the self of the world, and the world can't do anything to myself. There's nothing here that is not myself. That's one thing. And that's the jnani's vision. And the self that I am can never be harmed. Now, where is the fear going to be? The fear comes in the dvaita. I'm stumbling a little bit here because I want to say something else. The body will react with fear, in a sense, will pull back, will run from dangerous situations, just instinctually. You know, that type of fear, though, is what we call a mithya fear. It's a mithya fear. It's a reaction. There's not going to be a reaction upon on top of the reaction. You know, it's a, what do you call it? It's organic.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's instinctual. Those type of things are all there, you know. But the fear of Ishvara is not there. The fear of Ishvara's order is not there. It's like the fear of myself is not there. And at the same time, I'm not expecting to live forever. You know, I'm not expecting that the world, that I'm not going to die. I'm not expecting that everything is going to be fine. What I know is that this whole order is Ishvara, and this body, mind, sense organs, and my prarabdha are all a part of it. And I let that play out, all the while my mind abiding in the stability of myself that remains unaffected. And so because my being remains unaffected, the fear, whatever might be there, whatever vagaries might be there, are mithya because they're not touching me. And so the mind rooted in that stability experiences the world. So that the only one that can be free of bhaya, of real fear, is the jnani. The self has no fear. The self is non-dual. So from the standpoint of me, it's impossible for me to experience fear. But the vagaries of the world, there's a devotion to Ishvara's order, and in that order, this body, mind, sense organs are a part, and I trust the order. I trust the infinite intelligence of the order, and I allow myself to experience that. That's the abhaya. The udvega is anxiety. Anxiety and fear are the kind of the same. Anxiety is a little different, but anxiety is the tension over wanting something to happen in a particular way. I can do everything that needs to be done, and I don't require it to work out. You know, I do my best to take care of things or to be in the situation in a way that's helpful to the situation, but I can't control the situation. You can never control it. And so I'm willing to be in the situation as it is. I don't demand that it be different, and I don't feel that it being different is going to harm me. I just do my dharma in the situation and then let the chips fall where they may. And I'm willing for that. I'm not anxious about that happening, but I'm not anxious from the standpoint of the mind about that happening, because myself isn't anxious. Maybe this is maybe one really deep way to understand it. Atma is not anxious. Atma is not afraid. Doesn't have bhaya. Atma is not jealous. Right? And Atma doesn't get excited when things go well. Right? My being is always exactly the same. And so the buddhi, when it is situated in my me, its response is also going to be much different, right, than if the buddhi has me projected out into the world. And so it also is going to enjoy these things, you know, of not really having this jealousy or intolerance or fear, you know. But it can have it on mitya levels. But you don't have it. Your being never has it. And as your mind is abiding in your being isn't going through these type of modifications, and so your being is free. You are free from it. And when that's the stance, when your mind is, and your buddhi is always reveling in your own self, because your self is what all beings seek, when it enjoys being home, then these things aren't meaningful anymore. That's the main one nice way of saying it. They don't exist in you, and for the buddhi and the manas, they're just not meaningful. And so for you, the world, so now this top one, which is really the sannyasi vow, let no being be afraid of me, and let me not be afraid of any being. That's the vow they take in sannyasa. If I don't need to gain anything from the world, there's no reason for me to be afraid of it. And if I'm not in competition, there's no reason for anybody to be afraid of me. Because it's fine with me for you to be as you are and to seek whatever you want to seek. For you to be as you are and do what you do. Because I'm not in competition with you and I don't need you to give anything to me.
So beautiful.
It is. Now, where this gets to be really wonderful, and Swamiji has this completely mature. I don't think he could be more mature in this. With Swamiji, it doesn't matter to him how others behave toward him. And because he's a sitting duck for an infinite number of transference, you know, any amount of emotions and feelings and angers and hurts and can all be endlessly projected on him, because we need him. You know, as the teacher, you need him. You know, you need his love and so many things. And so many things, thousands of people. But it doesn't do anything to him. You know, because he's not asking you to be a particular way so that he can be happy. And I think as we mature, this is the stability we get. You know, we're stable in so many ways, but I think this is an interpersonal stability, where your well-being is not, or who you are is not jeopardized by the emotions another is feeling towards you. You know, and when that's the case, then you become a stable center for that person, and for yourself. But that's a tremendous freedom. You can be as you are, and I won't take it on. So Swamiji says in this language, don't carry all these people inside of you. Don't carry people inside of you. Because what he means is, if you're having, say, somebody's having an emotional reaction toward you, they're angry or they're mistaking you in some way, you can take it in. It's like you swallow the person inside, and then the two of you are now walking. You carry that person around in you. There's no reason to take that inside. It belongs to them. Those emotions belong to them. And to be able, he'll say like this, because I've learned a lot from these things, have been really important for me in my own maturing. Give the people, he said in these very words, give people the space to have their feelings and their emotions. Just give them their space. Let them have that. You know, don't let it come inside of you. If you let it come inside of you, it's then you're tethered to it. You know, and you have to actually, you swallow in yourself the very emotion that they're having, and then you two are tied together. You give everybody their space, let them have their feelings and their emotions, and then you be helpful if you can. He is that. I consider that based on my own process of maturing, something very, very beautiful to slowly, as we slowly grow into that. And when you are like that, then really you're not a problem to other people. Until you really have that and we grow into that maturity, we can be a problem to other people because we are reacting off of them. You know, we're coming into that space, you know, and needing this or needing that from them, rather than just allowing people to be without you having that need. So we're talking about a sannyasi here, somebody who has knowledge. And we watch ourselves as we gain our own nishta and clarity, maturing into this type of emotional freedom. Because if you think about it, to be able to sit with that type of emotional freedom, then there's really nothing that anybody can do, and they're all fine the way they are. And you can just simply help. When you're like that, then that people can trust you. Yeah, because you're not going to be teetering off. their behavior is not going to make you teeter. So it's a beautiful thing. So he says, be that person is somebody who people do not fear, and that person, that nyani also, does not fear others. You know, does not make others tremble. He or she doesn't have harsha at her appellation. If you get very, very, very happy, very, very excited, oh brother, you know, you're going to have to go to the opposite.
Yeah.
You know, if you suffer from the amarsha, that's very painful because it's so isolating. You know, to feel that envy and jealousy.
And the
intolerance, to be able to not tolerate others or not tolerate situations, that's very, very isolating. And then the bhaya, the fear. I mean, there are so many things to fear. In the Taittiriya, even the smallest little whiff of duality causes fear. And so the only way free toward abhayam, that fearlessness, is really the Atma, you know, the non-dual. And udvegaha, that anxiety over what's going to happen to me. What's going to happen to me? Am I going to get this? Am I going to get that? What I have is fine. That's also the sannyasa vritti. It's called the alam buddhi. What I have is fine. Swamiji says that only really what can give us that alam buddhi, it's enough, it's fine, is food. But unfortunately, it's temporary. Like, you can eat and eat and eat, and then you finally say, no, it's enough, I can't eat one more thing. You know, the Thanksgiving syndrome. I can't.
12 hours later.
Yeah. I can't even, no, one more, everything's fine, not one more. So, but that only lasts for a little while. But for Ajnani, no, everything's fine, I really don't want anything. This is good, what I have here is fine. At Alam Buddhi. So that's the freedom from that Udvega. So Muktaha means the one who is free from that, liberated from that. He who is liberated from that, Sachame Priha. That one is beloved to me. You know, so Krishna says, that one is beloved to me. But the one who really is that, like that, is the Atma. The self is that, is the one who is that. And the Jnani is the one who knows I am that. And that one is all of these things. The Atma is non-threatening. Absolutely non-threatening. Whatever is there, and you can think about it, when the buddhi has nishta in my being, then I am the self. My buddhi is living up to who I am. You see that? When the buddhi has nishta, clarity, knowledge, without any doubt, the buddhi then is living up to me because I am its very self. And so it is a voice for me, who I am. Right? Because there's no nishta, there's no lack of clarity there. And the self is tol abhayam. Every experience that you have, the self accommodates. It doesn't change its love. It doesn't change its tune, so to speak. It is there for you in the same way, infinitely, forever, because it's free from time. You know? And so there's nothing that you can do which it will hurt you or will make it hurt you or reject you, because it's free. It's non-dual. It's not subject to change. So for the Mahatma, for the Jnani that has this Dridhat Nishtya, this absolute clarity without any doubt, that buddhi is not different than the self. You see that? It's not different from the self. And so the way that it responds, the way that it acts, you know, the way that it holds you is the self. So very beautiful that one. It's a self, you know, manifest fully in the buddhi. So the behavior of the buddhi is an expression of the self. So
the knowledge is purified in the mind.
It does. It allows the mind to mature and grow. Definitely. Yeah. Okay, let's stop there. Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.
So nishchaya can be clarity or firmness.
Yeah, but that's what, as firmness.
Firmness,
yeah. Swamiji's sense changed, because then what does firmness mean? And so he pushed it a little farther. We used to just say, like, dridha, the word dridha does mean firmness.
Yeah.
Nishchaya also has that sense of firmness. Sometimes we've just used that, but really clarity is better. Like nishchaya jnanam, like say if you say firm knowledge, what does that mean? It means knowledge that is very clear, in which there is clarity, no doubt, because it's like doubt and confusion that makes it not firm. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you use clarity, and that's what he's been using for a while now. Yeah.
Yeah, he brought out one time where he said, I just love clarity.
Mm-hmm.
I love clarity.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes he kind of changes the words that he's using because he finds another word that he feels
gets it
a little bit more. But if you say nischa jnanam, knowledge which is clear, free from doubt, which is, you know, firm, solid. Yeah. Dridha jnanam. Dridha means firm like a post. But that firm like a post, you know, the example of a, like if you dig a post hole and stick a post in it, and then initially, you know, it's just wobbly, but as you pound more dirt in it, it becomes dridha. Becomes firm, so it can't wobble anymore. So like that, your knowledge becomes dridha. It becomes firm. Firm in its clarity. Nothing can shake it. Initially, you know, you gain some understanding, and then there'll be... But the understanding isn't contextualized. And so it can become shaky. You get it, and then you say, yeah, but what about this? So that's the first piece of dirt. And that's answered. Yeah, but it could be this, another piece of dirt, you know. Could be this. Or how come it's not like this? Until every thought or every doubt you have in your mind has been presented, you know, and worked through so that you see it. Until there is no more question. There's only the knowledge there. But until there's just the knowledge there, there's question. And that's that asking those questions is the shaking the post until all of those things become clear and the knowledge becomes very firm, free from doubt.
I think sometimes it's not just a question of understanding it intellectually or even firmness, but you have to look through the situations that...
You do. You have to see it. It has to be.
I mean, you have to live it.
Yeah, you have to live it.
You have to come up against situations that nothing's a problem until it's a problem, and then it's a problem.
Yeah, and when it's a problem, then that
not to be a problem is.
That's the sadhana. Yeah. Like your whole life is a sadhana.
But a problem
is either it's either living out your knowledge or it's a sadhana. One or the other.
Yeah, but you know, when you have a problem, it doesn't appear as a doubt. It comes in a different form.
Well, the thing is that when you're having a problem in the world, we might not call that a doubt.
Yeah.
But actually, I call it usually emotional lag time. You know, where just habitually, or the problems in the unconscious, things, complexes and things are still not being held well by the buddhi. They haven't had a chance to really mature in the light of your knowledge, and so there's an emotional lag time there.
Mm. Or they haven't been accepted. That's how it always feels to me. There are things that I really haven't accepted yet that I'm still saying no to within myself.
Yeah.
Not so much out in the world, but more how the patterns appear and how I have battled with them until finally I say, I'm tired of fighting this. You know, it's like,
yeah.
I
and you can give some space to it.
Mm-hmm. I can't fix it. And I can't fix it as the ego, but if I just let go,
it'll take care of itself. You might not be able to fix it, but you can hold it in a way that it can flourish. You know, it can fix itself to whatever degree it can.
Right. I can't fix it is when I finally realize that I can't fix it.
Yeah.
Then I let go and I say, it's all just being done. Why am I, you know?
Yeah, it can be like, let Bhagavan do what he wants with it.
Yeah, exactly.
I do my best and let Bhagavan handle it, you know?
Yeah.
Yes,
but it takes me days sometimes, you know, to finally get to that point.
But, you know, it takes days, but those days become shorter as you get, as you reap the rewards of being able to do that. You know, like say you can do it with one problem, one issue, and you realize the rewards of being able to do that, then it's easier to do it with the next issue, or to do it with that issue again when it rises.
Right. I mean,
because you learn how to be with that, with all of that. And also, you know, we're not perfect. Our minds aren't perfect, our buddhis aren't perfect, our bodies aren't perfect, our relationships aren't perfect, there's nothing perfect. And so if you're intolerant, you're really screwed. You have a bad situation there. Because all the way through, even Jung says, don't use the word perfect. Say it whole. Mm. Use the word wholeness, not perfection.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Because this perfection thing, you know, you can never be perfect enough. It's not reachable.
That's very interesting. My very first spiritual teacher, I was in my mid-20s, made that comment. He says there's no such thing as perfection. There's only the striving for it. That's how he put it.
Yeah.
I never forgot that.
Yeah. Jung talks like that too. Swamiji talks like that too. I mean, it's something to be realized, because otherwise you can be disappointed in ourselves.
Yeah.
Well, what if you want perfect viveka, or perfect knowledge that will make it steady?
Well, I think that this, because the self is non-dual,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't have any parts.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to look at it from the right side and then the left side and then the top and the bottom, you know? It just simply is what it is without any parts, that you can know yourself fully and completely, where there is nothing in Maya that is like that.
Mm.
Within Maya, everything, every situation has an infinite variety of standpoints and an infinite cause-effect relationship circling it, you know, 360 degrees. That have gone into making this thing what it is at this moment, and there is really literally no way to get to the bottom of it. And so you can never know anything completely, you know, or understand anything completely. And I would even, say that that's nice to apply to yourself, not Brahman, not your being, but to the upadhi, to your body, to your mind, to your unconscious, to try to get to the bottom of all of the responses that come out of your mind, you know, and all of the, some of the ways that you act out in this, to really understand that fully, all of the complexity is, I don't think, really possible.
Yeah, because some of the responses come, it seemed like they come not from yourself, but from on their own.
They rise up on their own, you can say that, because there's no way for us to know sometimes all of the pieces that have gone into making that reaction. We never really know, because it goes back infinitely.
Yeah.
But you can, some things you kind of know, you know, in a simple form, what's bringing about all of this stuff. But sometimes just the way you are, you don't fully know. But then you have to be with it and
hold
it. And with your understanding of Dharma, you try not to act out the things that go against your value system. But sometimes you won't always understand the way things are, the way all people are. It's very complex.
Well, that gives you a relief for being the one responsible for...
We can't be totally responsible, in a sense, for the moods and emotions and feelings and all of this that we have, because it's too complicated.
Mm.
All you can do is be one who knows how to hold them and to control your acting out to the best of your ability.
Mm.
And sometimes you'll fail. We do the best. Knowledge is the great, great aid for all of this, because it takes the pressure off the mind, you know, in terms of seeking ananda. And as you gain that clarity, more and more the pressure to have to become something or to gain something goes away.
And can you say,
you can relax.
Can you say that's the origin for that is Ishwara's order rather than...
The origin for everything is Ishwara's order.
Isn't that nice?
Hallelujah.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, then you can't blame...
Right,
yourself. You can't blame you know, for being defective, you know.
Yeah.
you just do your best.
This huge wheel. Remember we were talking about this huge wheeled carriage that they have in India?
Yeah.
And when I think of the order, I always think of this huge wheel that just,
that
you
like a Ferris wheel?
Yeah.
Like a what? Well, you know those carriages they have in India when they have a festival. We
were
talking about that the other day.
And you pull it around.
It's just so big.
Yeah.
And so I always think of that as like this wheel is just turning. This is the order. You know, it's like, okay.
Well, it's weird though, because you have a tendency or an urge to blame. Well, you know, if I was just better, you know.
Yeah.
This wouldn't be going on.
I'm going to call it a night now.
Well, that was good.
Yeah.
So this is the mind.